We were studying chapter 9 of Ecclesiastes last class, and we're just wrapping up the section discussing the inevitability of death, how we endure it. We saw that at the beginning of the chapter, death happens to all. It's the common fate of man. And it's regardless of our actions in life, we must face death. And then with that in regard, we just take the time to enjoy what we have. Enjoy, to eating, drinking, enjoying our lives, enjoying our companions. And in verse 10 through 12, we're looking at the uncertainty of life. We covered that pretty well, but I wanted to just make a few points on something I forgot to talk about. it's fairly clear. We were talking about how if you find something to do, we do it mightily and fervently with all our, with our hearts, with a, determination, with our energy and with enthusiasm, because, why do we say that was wise to do that? Because life's uncertain, because death comes upon us suddenly. And when you looked at I wanted to go into a little more in verse 11 through 12, mostly in 11, where it said, "I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor to men of skill, but time and chance happen to them all." And in verse 12, and he goes on and talks about how, that is death. Like men are caught in a cruel net. The sons of men are snared in evil time when it falls suddenly upon them. We looked at it, and we all know that death comes upon us, and sometimes we believe it's way out there or whatever, but in verse 11, what I wanted to look at was, we know it's sudden, we know it's not of our choosing, we don't know the time, but I had the idea that there's no guarantee of life. And when we looked at 11, we see the race is to the swift. And what is if someone is not to tell you the outcome of a race, but look, that guy right there, number 11 out of 14, he's the fastest one out there. Who do you think is going to win?
Fastest one, right?
Yeah, the one that we think is the fastest. He's the fastest. We know he's the fastest. He won the last race. He'll win this one too. But it's not, the race isn't to the swift. And here we see the battle. You think the battle, who's going to win the battle? The strong or the weak?
The one who endures the most.
Obviously, you think the warrior would win the battle.
Yeah, obviously you think the warrior would win the battle. The strongest is going to win the battle. If you pit if you put me in a wrestling match against some guy who's 270 pounds, I'm 160, it doesn't look too good for me. Unless I could use my wisdom to cheat him, I don't think that's going to happen. This guy is going to, if it comes down to pure strength, this guy is going to overpower me. I just don't have the strength he has. We see that, in everyday lives we go, the fastest is going to win, the strongest is going to win. we see here, riches are to the men of understanding, and favor to men of skill. We think, of course, in the workplace or under a more authoritarian situation, the people who have the most skill are going to be the most favored. We believe that is the way it should be. Joe is the best, worker we got. He's here 12 hours a day and he's just excellent. And does it assure him of the favor of the boss? We see in here everything goes contrary to what we usually believe. And it's just that, we see these things in life and go, this is guaranteed, and we are in general, but in life that's not always the case. There is no guarantees on anything. No matter how strong someone may appear, they may not always win, or how fast they are, they may not always win. The wise, you think they have the understanding to gain their bread, to gain riches, and it's not always the case. And the reason was because time and chance hamper it all. Things, they're outside of our control happen. And so it is in death, we think, I you know, live my life healthy, and I do this, and I do that, and I follow the wise ways, and I set everything up to where, you know, yeah, I'm going to increase my odds, I'm going to increase my probability, but it's never a guarantee, it's never 100%. So, we need to prioritize our actions, because there's just no certainties, no absolutes. The only absolute is that death will come. Makes sense, right? So in verse 13, the end of this chapter, we're looking at why we should esteem wisdom, that wisdom should be esteemed. And in verse 13 through 16, I'll read, it says, "This wisdom I have seen, I have also seen under the sun, and it seemed great to me. There was a little city with few men in it, and a great king came against it, besieged it, and built great snares around it. Now there was found in it a poor and wise man, and he by his wisdom delivered the city. Yet no one remembered that same poor man. Then I said, wisdom is better than strength. Nevertheless, the poor man's wisdom is despised, and his words are not heard. Words of the wise, spoken quietly, should be heard, rather than the shout of a ruler, rather than the shout of a ruler of fools." And we see here that there was a small city. It says there was few men in it, and it was besieged by a king who built great snares around it. And you can take snares as, I believe, as the siege works, things to help him overcome the city. And it doesn't say he had more men, but given that the city had few, you would naturally assume that they had more people. That this small city is going to be overrun by this great king. And was it?
No.
No, it wasn't. And what prevented him?
A poor wise man.
We don't know how he did it, but we know that the wisdom of the man, the wisdom of this poor man, saved the city. Saved it from the wrath of this king. And you also look at, you know, verse 18, just a little further down, it says, wisdom is better than weapons of war. And we've read this before. And we've seen that all throughout this book, how wisdom is better, how... We know wisdom is better. But, so here's this great thing. This poor wise man led this city to... I keep trying to think of a different word. He saved the city. And you think they built great statues of him, wrote a great epic play about him, you know, that his actions would be remembered throughout time? What does it say that these people did for him?
They
forgot him. Yeah, they forgot him. I mean, it's unfortunate, isn't it? He wasn't appreciated for his service that he's done for everyone. He was forgotten. He wasn't remembered by anyone. And we know that sometimes the words of the wise are despised and no one listens, as it says in verse 16. We know they listened to him in this case, but by his plan he led the city his escape from this king. But no one remembered the deeds he'd done. He wasn't honored for his actions and for the wisdom he had. Is that showing honor? I mean, is that giving wisdom the place of honor that it deserves?
No.
Yeah, no, it's not. We have one personal answer to that. Yeah, we're talking throughout this book how wisdom is better than foolishness, how it's better than this, it's better than that, and the reasons why. It should have a place of honor. It has preeminence. And these people, they were saved by it. And they didn't give the wisdom its preeminence it deserved. They looked to other things to honor other things. So we know wisdom it should have been esteemed for that man just based on what he's done. But his wisdom wasn't esteemed, and neither was he. In 17, you know, quiet words of wisdom should be heard and applied. And why is that? Several reasons here, and there are several reasons we've discussed through the book. Why should wisdom be esteemed?
In this case, it provided deliverance.
Yeah. This case, it provided deliverance. It saved the city. Why else does it say in verse 16? Yeah, wisdom is better than strength. And here we can apply it to the strength against this king. We've also seen, I think that's the next chapter, also seen that, you know, just in remedial tasks, you know, verse 10 of chapter 10, it says, if an axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then one must use more strength, but wisdom brings success. We know that in place of strength, wisdom can be used to accomplish things. Also, if you look to Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 5. Same thought. A wise man is strong. Yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. We know strength isn't always needed to perform a task, but wisdom will accomplish it. We know in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, in verse 12, for wisdom is a defense, as money is a defense. The excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it. Of course, yeah, wisdom can bring life. You know, and here we see through the strength over the king, you know, he saved the city, he saved, spared the lives of these people. But more than that, just, you know, providing for ourselves to maintain life. We've also seen in Ecclesiastes 2. We read that in 2:14, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceive the same event happens to all. Oh. I guess I want to start in 13. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head. Of course, here we're talking about that the wisdom can guide you properly. That you know, you're more apt to see danger and escape it. More apt to successfully evade the, you know, difficulties of life. Again, like I said, that's only an increased probability, not a guarantee. But all of these things, wisdom is better, and wisdom aids us. So why is it, when we look in 17, who's being listened to? Who do people listen to in many cases? Do they listen to the words of the wise?
Those who make the most noise.
Here we see, those who make the most noise. They don't always listen to the wise words, but sometimes in the way words are spoken. Wise words spoken quietly, no one's paying attention. The person they did listen to was the shout of a ruler. And of course, we all know what shouting is. I'm weird, I defined it anyway. Of course, we know shouting is to utter in a loud voice, but also the sense is to command it, command attention. Someone who's, you know, commanding attention is shouting. He's loud, vocalized. Everyone's attention focuses on that person and listens to him. And in this case, is this person worthy of being listened to? Is he worthy of the attention that's given to him? No, he's not. How did we come to that conclusion?
He doesn't have a wise plan.
Yeah, he doesn't have a wise plan. We see here, just by comparison, that this person who's doing the shouting is the ruler of fools. In comparison with the words of the wise, even though this man doesn't have any wisdom, It's shouting, gaining this attention, you know, this distinction, only through this pretentious act, this inflated speech. Yet, the
not only is he a fool, but those who listen to him are fools. Verse 17, among fools.
Yes, those listening are among fools. I was looking for a word. There's no substance. There we go. No substance to his words, are there? It doesn't say there's any substance. There's no wisdom. There's no substance to what he's saying. But everyone pays him attention. Listening to a fool makes you a fool. If you're,
yeah. I was just thinking, the quietness of fools sometimes is just shouting, just to, so people will hear. That's his sole purpose, just so people can hear him. And he does it in a loud, boisterous way, with no meaning. It's just, it's empty. As you state, no value.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus wisdom, it says in quietness. That's humility. To me, I think humility when I think that. The contrast is so sharp there.
Well, I think it's the point is made in contrast to exemplify the situation. We know if someone starts shouting words of wisdom and the other one's shouting words of foolishness, maybe he might be heard better just because he's shouting. But that's not the point. The point is we shouldn't be listening to those who are trying to command our attention just for that pure sake. We need to analyze what's being said, and we need to listen to those, even if someone's speaking quietly. You listen to them, and you realize what they're saying. If it's wisdom, that's what we should be listening to. Otherwise, as you're saying, we become fools ourselves. Pretentious, inflated speech, but there's no substance behind it, and there's no profit, no advantage in it. And in verse 18, we just read the addition to that. We saw that wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. And here we're talking about that one ruler through his pretentious speech, his foolish speech, through his commanding attention of everyone. He can destroy a lot of good through his foolish wisdom in guiding these people down the wrong path. I know there's a case of Absalom. If we look to 2 Samuel, Second Samuel 15. In 15, verse 1, it speaks here of Absalom and says, after this had happened, that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way to the gate. So it was whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, what city you were from? And he would say, your servant is from such and such tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you. Moreover, Absalom would say, oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me. Then I would give him justice. And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. And in this manner, Absalom acted toward all Israel who came to the king for judgment. And so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And does it say here he stole the hearts of the men of Israel by his good deeds, by his upright wisdom and judgments? Is that the case? No, it's not the case. How did he do it?
Not an outward display.
Yeah, by outward display of flattery.
Charisma, I think of it, his manner of the way he presents himself and all that. You can do that.
I said, y'all need change.
I didn't say that. You said it.
President Luther's no good, y'all need change.
Yeah, and he said, I'll do it right. I'd hear you if only I was somebody. You know, but is that, did he just display any wisdom? Doesn't say he did. He's just flattering to the ear, right? He's telling people what they want to hear. Oh, I like that. Yeah, that sounds good. You know, commanding people's attention. And they, you know, he would run to them and get their attention, tell them things they want to hear. And so, you know, it says here about how he had provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Something which commands attention. Wow, whoa, look at this. What's going on? You know, this big group of people going through. Commanded attention to him, focuses attention on him, and then through flattery gains the people, yet there was no wisdom behind it, no substance. I'm stuck in that word now. Finally thought of it. And we know that, you know, Absalom led a rebellion against his father. And through this conspiracy, David had to flee with his men, and a big war ensued. Absalom was killed, but it divided the kingdom for a time. And in that battle, there's over 20,000 casualties. And all this through a man who is folly and leading others into folly led them to this into devastation. This one man destroyed this, you know, the good kingdom, and led to this. Now I'm blanking on the words again. Unfortunate situation. So we need to, you know, evaluate what people are saying and not be led by fools down a path of foolishness. And, you know, as it was said in Ecclesiastes 2:14, the wise man knows his path, sees his path, but a fool is in darkness. We need to prevent that from letting ourselves get led down, you know, a path we can't see. I also had here the case of Achan, but I don't know, further thinking about it, I was kind of like, why did I put that here? Yeah, I guess I let myself run around. But if you look to the case of Achan, it's back in Joshua 22. It is a case where one man caused great devastation. The only problem was it wasn't within the context we were talking about. It wasn't with words that he did it. But in 22:20, it says here, "Did not Achan, the son of Zerah, commit a trespass in the accursed thing? And wrath fell on all the congregation of Israel. And that man did not perish alone in his iniquity." And you look back at chapter 7, where that incident actually occurred. It was back in chapter 7, verse 1. It says, "But the nation of Israel defeated the city of Ai, and they were told to destroy everything and not take anything from that city. But in verse 1 it says that the children of Israel committed a trespass regarding the accursed things. For Achan, the son of a bunch of people of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed things. So the anger of the Lord burned against the children of Israel." And verse 5, I'm getting confused. They didn't destroy Ai yet. It was a city of Jericho. They were attacking the city of Ai, but they went against that city, and the city of Ai struck down about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate as far as Sherarim and struck them down on the descent. And due to the anger of the Lord burning against them, in verse 11 through 12, we see that it says, "Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. For they have even taken some of the accursed things, and have both stolen and deceived, and they have also put it among their own stuff. Therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they have become doomed to destruction. Neither will I be with you anymore, unless you destroy the accursed one from among you." And he looked to verse 24 and 25. They found out who it was, And that one man and his entire family was destroyed. And, you know, his sole action caused the deaths of his family and the deaths of those that were in that battle because they weren't with him anymore. Like I said, that is a case where one man destroyed a lot of good. I think I ran away with myself, though, but because it doesn't have to do anything with his foolish speech. It was just his action that, you know, and his deceit, and the fact he kept a secret that led him to thus. I do think of another one, though. The case of Rehoboam in 1 Kings 12. You know, 1 Kings 12, Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, took the throne. And all the people came to him, asking to ease their burdens. And he told them, go away, I'm going to think about it. And in verse 6, it said, Rehoboam consulted the elders who stood before his father Solomon while he still lived. And he said, what do you advise me to answer these people? And they spoke to him, saying, if you will be a servant to these people today, and serve them and answer them, and speak good words to them, then they will be your servants forever. And it says in verse 8, he rejected the advice which the elders had given him, and consulted the young men who had grown up with him, who stood before him, because they were so wise. Is that what it says? No. It's funny that, you know, he probably was just this, he was guided by his peers. Here were the elders, men of experience, men who, as it says, gave advice to Solomon as he ruled. So they had experience, they had knowledge in the affairs of ruling. And yet he turned to the young men who grew up with him, people who had no more experience than him, and he listened to their words. And in verse 10 it says, the young men who had grown up with him spoke to him, saying, thus you should speak to this people who has spoken to you. Your father made our yoke heavy, but you make it lighter on us. Thus you shall say to them, my little finger shall be thicker than my father's waist. And now, whereas my father put a heavy yoke on you, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges. And what was the outcome of this? In verse 17, the people heard this, in verse 16 and 17, and when all Israel saw that the king did not listen to them, the people answered the king, saying, what share have we in David? We have no inheritance in the son of Jesse. To your tents, O Israel. Now see your own house, O David. So Israel departed to their tents. In 17, but Rehoboam reigned over the children of Israel who dwelt in the cities of Judah. And in verse 19, so Israel has been in rebellion against the house of David to this day. And so you see here, the folly of these few caused what to happen? Yeah, the kingdom was divided. This the kingdom, the great kingdom Solomon had helped develop, you know, of course, by God, and God's wisdom and God's providence. But they developed a great, great nation, and now that nation has just been not even split in half. It's been chopped in, one third has been cut out, and the rest has gone its own way. And of course, we know that the king who led Israel later built the calves, and that whole nation went to sin and was destroyed. We need to beware of listening to the foolish. So, do we still have examples of this in modern day life where people listen to the foolish instead of the wise to their own destruction? Or to their own hurt?
Look at the mega churches. You know, these mega churches have really come into prominence lately, and people are not looking into the Bible, looking at what these preachers are saying. They just love what they hear and love what the message that they're getting, and so they're just blindly following them, and that's going to lead to their destruction.
That is the case, and probably most of those guys on TV are leaving mega churches. But they tickle the ear. They run around and they shout a lot. They command attention. They invigorate, you know, emotional feelings and sentiment, get everyone worked up. And again, is there any wisdom behind what they're saying or what they're doing? In most cases, not. It's just that emotion that, wow, you know, people, you know, just drawn in by that attention. And they look around and look at all these people. Well, I must be doing the right thing. Got to be the right thing. So many people are doing it, right? Yeah, that's an excellent example of that.
Entertainment industry.
Yeah, the entertainment industry. You know, movies, television, advertisements, all of it. That whole industry is focused on getting your attention. You know, that everything about it is to draw your attention in, to focus on what they're trying to show to you, and of course, making profit, which is why they're doing it. They're seeking your attention, but everything there, you know, leads you astray. Everything there is designed to show you what you want, not what you need. You know, it's to sell itself, not to improve you in any way whatsoever.
My click.
Jim?
The thing you kept pointing to, which I think about in applying it personally, is we can also give foolish wisdom ourselves by not applying and using God's word, because there's no mistakes there. It's perfect. And I'm trying to work that out with my kids, but that's where we can go wrong as far as individually. Is, you know, I know what's right. I'm better because I've been to the job. Whatever the case may be, that doesn't make it right. What makes it right, that makes it good, is what God said. You know, that's what we have to keep in focus.
Yeah. And we have to pay attention, too, that we always take everything in context, right, and we study. I mean, because, you know, those mega churches and preachers, they use the Bible and they point to things. But, you know, things are sometimes, they take things out of context, they use things to suit their own needs without studying what the Bible is teaching itself. Oh, I know what I want to know, and here's something that will support me. And they'll pull it out. And so we have to be careful about, you know, this book is wisdom, and it has it all. We have to extract that wisdom. And believe me, teaching this class, it's not easy extracting that wisdom. It takes a lot of work.
You have a good job.
You got to work at it. It takes a lot of time. But, you know, yeah, if we do that, we will grow in wisdom versus allowing ourselves to guide ourselves by our own folly. Is in Rocky.
Mike, on your examples here, you were kind of looking at the negative about foolishness, listening to the foolish. One case of example, I think, the point about just the opposite of the power of wisdom, which you made the point that wisdom gives strength, is the case of Abigail and King David. You know, she wasn't in a poor situation, but the power of her words and the impact they had on King David and prevent him from doing things that he was about to do, it shows you the power of it. And I guess the second thing is about the power of words. We look at, maybe obvious as today, but how God deals with mankind today is through words. And here you have this example here about this king. Look at all the energy he put forth to besiege the city. He says that he laid a large siege work, a lot of energy, a lot of things that he did to try to conquer the city. And here was just these words he was able to save the city. Again, shows the power of wise words. And I think the lesson for us today is for us to speak. You know, here we have, we're children of God, we study the Bible, we have this wisdom, the power that we have to influence others by our counsel, using God's word, is very, very powerful, and the impact that we can have on others. We can keep going as far as speak forward in His words.
Yeah, even if we assume no one's going to listen, and maybe that's the case, and maybe people won't listen, doesn't mean we shouldn't speak wise words for people to listen. Someone may listen. And you brought up the case of Abigail. That I'm actually going to discuss that more in chapter 10, but that is a point where, yeah, this Abigail came to David with words of wisdom, and in that case, the benefit was he did listen to her. And it worked out, you know, it came out for the betterment of them all. So yeah, that was a case where, yeah, wisdom was followed, and it was the right course was chosen.
And looking at the church today, looking back on your example of Rehoboam, isn't it wonderful that the organization that God created for the local church with the elders, and if you've ever been in a congregation that has elders and one that doesn't, there's a huge difference. And to have that wisdom of elders, when you have good elders in place, it's just, it just shows the love and the wisdom of God.
Yes, it does. We're lucky to have good elders. We have good elders because there are men in their youth who studied hard, who gained that wisdom through years of experience to become elders. See, we need to remember that as well. We don't put the Bible under a pillow at night and wake up 20 years from now and go, got it. I wish it was that easy. I think everyone does. That's not the case, is it? But anyone else have any other examples?
If you're a Republican, you probably think everything a Democrat say fall in this category. You know what, you're probably right.
I was trying to.
But you know, it is. God made it clear that righteousness exalts the nation. And when you have leadership, I don't care what party it is, but it doesn't matter. What kind of government you have done that? When you have leadership that looks to power, use their words to continue to attain sustained power over the good of the people, which is really what Reborn did, then one wonders just men of the gospel get tired of that and choose to do something relevant to the nation. And so words have a powerful impact, whether it's one-on-one or in mass like that.
Yeah. I was also going to bring up, we brought up the case of, you know, television, of politics, and, you know, foolish people leading by words, and the evangelists. So, but I also wanted to bring up the possibility of, you know, being led astray by friends or peers. And we saw Rehoboam was led astray by his peers. You know, we listen to our friends, saying, people listen to their friends. But, you know, we have to, you know, again, assess what our friends or our colleagues are saying for wisdom or folly. You know, and I guess you look at more, if you look back to when we're young, you listen to your friends instead of the wisdom of your parents. Your parents will tell you, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, here's, you know, the wise way, and then you go out and you're surrounded by your buddies and stuff, and what do? You listen to them and follow foolishness, or do you remember the words of your parents and the wisdom that I had to guide you? It's just another example. And I mean, we all see it when we're young, we see our parents versus our friends, wisdom versus, you know, the boisterous effect that, you know, youth had. But this of course is true even as we're adults, that we could be led astray by our peers, by our colleagues, by those who, you know, those of us who go to work every day are surrounded by people who are worldly, unless you're really lucky. And you know, you have to judge what people are saying, not to lead you astray.
Yes. In the Old Testament, Moses warned them about listening to their family. He told them in Deuteronomy 16, if it's your brother, your mother's son, your daughter, your wife, and they entice you to do evil, you were to bring them in heaven punished. And so we see that in the case of Joseph, that's exactly what happened. It was Joseph's brother. And these were grown men who they enticed one another to do evil against Joseph. So even in our own family, even people we may think are godly, we need to be very careful if they come up with some new doctrine or some new teaching or something that they want to get involved in to make money or whatever. We need to be careful that we don't listen to them also. Be sure that we're listening to the right words of wisdom.
That's right. We need to seek the wisdom in all things, not just take something. I mean, that's the point of this section is. It's not just taking on, you know, effect or who it is, but to analyze what's being said and evaluate it for what the best decision is. All right. Let's see, anyone else got more comments? Rocky?
His examples. I had two examples down about the foolish king. It kind of reminded me, sometimes I think we lose our sense of perspective. If you read in the Old Testament about these nations that have been destroyed, have judgment upon God, like Babylon and Syria and Greek and Rome, that's pretty fantastic. But in our own lifetime, we had two huge nations that had judgment that passed away right before our eyesight, the Soviet Union and Iraq. And here's cases of points, foolish kings, taking advantage of the people, you know, a lot of injustice, a lot of iniquity. And sometimes we say, we don't see God acting. And of course, we can't prove these things, but you know, we've had two nations gone before us. And so I had those two as examples of huge things that happened in our lifetime.
Yes. That's true.
I wanted to make one more passing comment, Mike. You were talking about earlier about speaking up, and I was thinking about, you know, that's true. But this is something I'm trying to work on myself right now. Sometimes it's wise, and that's takes, I'm thinking of our elders, taking experience, the experience and such. Sometimes it's wise just to keep your mouth shut, depending on where you're at. A lot of these applications, that's not the case. But there are times when we don't need to speak. We need to be quiet and, you know, just listen. Or you can imply instruction. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to be the last person to say something. That, you know, that's not necessarily so. Sometimes it's wise just to be quiet, listen, and get the information so that you can make some kind of decision. Sometimes we don't do that. No, because I know better. Well, that's hard to do sometimes. It's just using wisdom. Again, as you call elders, because they're very good about returning scripture. Here is it. Here it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that's my 2 bits.
Okay. I know. I got nothing else to say. Yeah, we can go through the review. Yeah, fine. Of course, hopefully everyone by now knows these things. I think everyone does start answering more frequently. But what does Ecclesiastes mean? We discussed. Yes, yeah, the preacher. And who wrote this book?
Solomon.
He's the preacher. And the question of the book, the entire focus of this book. Yeah, seeking to answer the question, what advantage is there under the sun? And the answer we have. Yeah, all is vanity. There is no lasting profit. The aspect of human life under consideration in this book. Yeah, everything under the sun, right? Doesn't include that outside of that focus. You know, it's under the sun and under the sun only. That which we see here on earth. And how do we? What was the recommendation we had on how to live?
Sorry?
Said enjoy the fruits of your labor. That's right, enjoy the fruits of our labor. Enjoy the portion and reward we have. Get you talking about it. And the outline of the book.
The
introduction.
And 1:4-6:12 is observations for living life.
Observations that we see in life.
And then the next section is the wisdom for life. That's 1:6. Anyway.